Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV from 20 years ago and before. And today we're here with Cassandra.
Hey.
Baylor.
Hey.
Angus.
Hello.
Mackenzie.
Hi.
Lisa.
As in her big brown eyes.
you said you were going to do it.
Jeanette.
Hi.
And I'm Justin. And today we're doing Dead Like Me, and I know nothing about Dead Like Me, but this is Mackenzie's pick, is that right?
Yes.
It's been my pick. I've been saying for the last how many years now I was going to do Dead Like Me, and then as soon as I've gone, right, this is my time, this is my place, she's gone, right, I'm taking this off you.
So what is Dead Like Me about? What is it? I've known nothing about it.
It's about this girl called Georgie, and she becomes a Grim Reaper. Where she grooms souls before they die.
Yep.
Yep, so in the pilot, which we're not watching, she dies when a space station...
The toilet seat
from a space station hits her. And
so it falls out of the sky.
Falls out of the sky and hits her and she dies. So she's toilet seat girl. So when she dies, instead of finding her lights and going to her,
so
you know...
So does she have a halo?
No.
A toilet seat halo.
She very much looks like a normal person. But you will see there'll be toilet seat references and then you'll understand why. So this show came out...
That's a new count for them.
Yeah. We're not counting them like we did with Mac and me. So instead of being able to go over to the other side, she's selected to be a Grim Reaper. And so like Kenzie says, she has to take the soul. So she touches someone before they pass so then they don't feel pain when they die.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Are there any other characters in the story?
So the family she had before she died was her mum, her dad, and then her sister Reggie, which she thinks of as like an invisible sister. And in her afterlife, during the show, every morning, first thing in the morning, they go to the cafe or restaurant called Der Waffle House.
Yeah, and they meet up with the boss, the Grim Reaper.
The Grim Reaper boss.
Their team leader, who then gives them their assignments for the day.
A pep talk.
Not the pep talk, but has to give them post-its that says...
No, I'd say it's a pep talk.
It's a bit of a pep talk, yeah. He's a bit of a father. He's the father figure, really, isn't he? Yeah. Tough father.
Definitely a father figure to the antagonist.
So they meet up and he gives them their post-its, which has who's going to die and what time, and then they have to go to that location and find them and reach them.
So what's her stick? What's she trying to do? Is she content with her job or is she...
I don't know how to say it, but she does her job because she has to. At first, she didn't enjoy it, but after a while, she gets the hang of it.
She goes through her own stages of grief and the way that she rebels against what's happened because she doesn't understand. She's an 18-year-old girl.
Yeah. And she's very
just died.
Misanthropic before she died and kind of aimless and didn't know what she wanted to do and didn't care about anything. And then she's died and then she's trying to find meaning out of the fact that her life... has meaning, but not in the meaning that she wanted. Yeah.
So who's watched this? Has everybody but me watched this?
I've heard of it, but I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
I thought you'd watched it.
No, I haven't.
So this is new for Cass as well?
Yeah.
And Baylor, obviously you've seen it. And does that mean Angus has seen it?
I've been shown a couple of episodes from season one. I only think about four or five. I don't think too many. Maybe a little bit more than that, but not too many at all. Mm. So it's...
This is one of the shows we were supposed to watch together.
Yeah, we created a list of shows
when did this come out? This is...
2003.
Right, and were there more than one series or...
Two seasons.
And a very bad movie.
And a movie that...
And a very bad movie.
I don't feel holds up.
I haven't seen the movie in a while, but I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it was all right. There's certain things I get angry about.
There's no Roo, and he's a big character in the show.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so from that point of view, yes and no. Because it's someone trying to do what George is doing, but George has finally learnt what Rube's all about. And so I think that's fun to see her actually grow as a person in the movie and go, you know what, this is all wrong.
Yeah.
All of this is wrong. So that's fun. Sorry, I don't think that's...
Jeanette, have you seen the movie?
No, I haven't.
So
I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to tell anyone about. So
not really.
So there's a few Dead Like Me virgins here.
And so we're What we're not showing the pilot episode. We're about three episodes in, so it's still very early. It's called Curious George.
Curious George.
So okay.
The one thing that does need to be noted, and I think for this episode, is that George doesn't look the way they used to in when they were alive.
Explain it. Yeah.
Yeah, but I
don't know if it's explained in this episode.
They do in the recap at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, because that was the thing. I was like, oh, why are they explaining that? Oh, good. Okay, yeah, that makes it easier.
Did they replace the actor or something?
No. So then when she walks around and, you know, she's out in the real world, they don't recognise her. They think she looks like someone else.
It's to help the people that she wants new in life move on because she can't go back to her old life. She has to live this new, more isolated life. Mm. And so they make her look different so that when she goes and approaches, she has to,
her face they don't notice different. Her.
And then if she spends too long where she used to be, she will lose memories as well.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So, as punishment.
So there's, in fact, a whole bit of world building here.
There was a lot of potential.
They created their own mythology.
Yeah, there was a lot of potential for some good world building, and they started getting into that in season two, and then, it got canned, which was a shame. So, like so many other good shows. This show is really special to me as well, because when I used to do community radio million years ago, I had a show on a community radio station on a Sunday afternoon, and I used to always make a point of driving home and popping in and seeing my parents on the way home.
Yep.
And then just happened to kind of hang around their place a little bit longer because they had Foxtel and I could watch Dead Like Me. I was telling Kenzie this afternoon, I said, I think they knew that I was holding off until this episode came on and then I'd sit there and watch it, but I think they were just happy for me to kind of pop in and visit them that they didn't care. So I never got to watch it in order because I was watching it every second Sunday as I would pop in on the way through, and if I couldn't drop in, then I'd miss episodes. So it was a little bit sporadic. So when I got to watch it the full way through, I got to really appreciate it.
So is it a developing story?
It works both ways.
You can kind of pick it up and put it down, but then there's also, it's more about the character development, not like a serialized story, if that makes sense. But yeah, so I hope you guys enjoy this one, because this one's been one that I've had on my list for years now, so about 3 years, and it's special to me.
It's been on my list too, admittedly.
Yeah.
In my list for a month.
I was going to say, as me and Baylor mentioned before, as when Justin interrupted us the first time, let alone the third. me and Baylor have had this on our list that we wrote up a list of shows and movies and stuff we wanted to watch together. We wanted to introduce each other to, and Dead Like Me has been on that list since the beginning.
Since the dawn of time, and when we were away house-sitting, I started getting Angus to watch it, and then Angus wanted to go do something else. So I was like, okay, I'll start watching my own thing then. And then he came out and watched Has-Been Hotel and Hell of a Boss with me. So
you're watching, what was it? Not Sanctuary, the other one.
Supernatural.
I think this is better, but yeah.
This is definitely better, but I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it, but I definitely need to be in a mood to sit back and watch it.
Watch this or Supernatural?
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baylor was watching Supernatural for the first time.
Like a comfort show to me. I can watch this over and over and over again. I just love it. So.
Yeah, maybe I've watched it too much when I was younger, because my sister and I watched it quite a bit. We loved it, but we got it from the library. So we don't have that. Stayed back and watched it on Foxtel.
Yes. We watched it when it was live on TV. Yeah.
No, I saw Dead Like Me and I'm like, oh, that sounds really edgy, because I was a teen at the time. I'm like, yeah, that sounds edgy. That's really speaking to me. And then I sat down and watched it and went, I mean, I like it, but it's not at all what I was expecting. Much like Cowboy Bebop, I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. Cowboys, anime,
jazz.
So different.
I know we're going to jump back into it, but this episode, I think, captures a lot of the different worlds. So her family that have lost her, and they're grieving in their own way and they're falling apart. Her fellow Grim Reapers, who are quite, they've had long lives and they're dealing with their own stuff as well. And then also, like, her workspace. So she works as a temp in an office and she hates her job, but then she's tied to these people as well. So when I did the intro at the beginning, they don't do it in this episode. One of my favorite characters is her boss, Dolores Herbig, who is Dolores Herbig, as in her big brown eyes. And she is, when we first started watching it with Kenzie, I said, no, trust me, I love Dolores Herbig. And she's like, whatever. And then I think by the end of the second season, she was like, oh my God, I love her. She's my favorite.
Yeah.
Because she's just crazy.
But also she's like such a great anchor.
Yes.
As well, I think overall for George, because she was the first person she really met outside when she was alive, and she's her first boss now in death. And I feel like it's just, it's the rock in her otherwise crashing seas.
Yes. And she gives her stability, she gives her a maternal figure, but she also pulls her up on her shit when she needs to as well. Yeah. And it's, yeah, but yeah, a really great character. And every time I see her in anything, and then when we watched Upload the other day and there was an episode, and Kenzie's like, oh my God, it's Dolores. And it's like, yes, just like me. So I really hope you guys enjoy this episode, because I've had a really bad track run. But unfortunately, this is Kenzie's choice, so I get no credit.
If it's bad, we'll say you failed again. If it succeeds, we'll say Kenzie won.
Your choice still is later in the year. You can outright choose one of Kenzie's shows and go, no, Kenzie, you've already had it. I'm presenting this to everyone else.
Yeah. Well, more appropriately, we can't rag on Kenzie if it's like secretly your choice, because you introduced it to Kenzie.
Yes.
And Kenzie will immediately say, hate watch. So we know that this is already good in her eyes, because she's not saying, hate watch.
So we'll see if this is Mackenzie's or Lisa's pick after the break. Okay, so that was Dead Like Me. What do you think, Cass? First time watching it?
Yeah.
That's the loudest I've ever heard you laugh.
Okay. I think there's a few plot lines of like, oh, again, gaining more at this time. Like, when they were trying to get the skydiver out of the tree. Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting how it did feel as though it was being bits and pieces here and there. Like, it felt like it was a good episode, but it also felt like only got half of the characterization for most of the characters.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I guess it's like, you can't do all the characters, there's half a dozen of them.
And it's a real grower like that, I think. You got to kind of, you stick with them. And,
yeah, because get like half of the personalities of the characters and trying to gauge what they're like based upon characters and still trying to work.
It sort of jumped a bit, didn't it?
Yeah, it's also trying to work out the logistics of this universe as well. Like, for example, if they're dead, why do they need to have lives and
about that.
Yeah,
I was confused by that earlier.
It's not so much confused, it's more like, okay, there's a reason why, but they're not explaining it, so I'm just like, okay.
Well, they're just not explaining it in this episode.
Yeah.
It was really hard to find an episode that would encapsulate the show and be able to kind of, but yeah, then we were never, never going to explain everything.
It's like, okay, they're probably explaining the world building later, and part of it was like, okay, they're not explaining enough of the world building here. But it's also, you can't shove everything into the episode. And realizing a few of the emotional beats, especially when George was looking back at her family, like, that was pretty hard. And, like, you need that emotional beat for the episode to work. And you need to explain.
Also, this is the third episode, so some of that's probably been explained already.
Yeah, I was thinking you can't really front load a lot of the world-building stuff, because otherwise you have really, really dry episodes. And I think this episode needed that emotional fallback of, this is what George's life is like, and she needs, not necessarily needs a family, but she's missing her family enough that she needs that connection. And having that, but also having the lighthearted fun stuff of like, oh yeah, he died because he wet himself and that urine triggered an electric shock. Huh. And having both of those things in there, and all this characterization would have either had the episode last an hour and a half or to have lost something. And you need actually have it be an episode of editing television first. And so, yeah, I kind of really want to get into the world building more, just because it felt like I was only getting half the story there.
It does trickle a bit, I think, as well. It's, but you kind of see glimmers of the different characters. And it's funny, it's like Roxy, who's the meter mage, she's the one who's really tough and she doesn't put up with any shit from anyone. And she's the one that would, someone tries to dispute a ticket and she shows them her gun, you know? Yeah. It's like she's that kind of person.
But then she's the
one that helps her when she's, you know, she's the one you can actually depend on. Whereas Betty, who's really sweet and kind and lovely, she don't care.
She's shallow, you know? Getting that little bit of characterization was enough to gauge, oh, this is what the character's like. Because even though it's pretty bare, not bare, but even though it's pretty simple in terms of what, the fact that they're able to convey that in, like, two scenes is pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, so I did feel as though they're trying to get as much characterization as they could from, like, two scenes per character. And it works, but it still feels like I'm missing out on enough that's me, like, I need to know more.
Yeah, that's it. It makes you hungry for more. Yeah. I want to learn more about these characters.
Yeah, and a bit of the world building as well. And a bit of, because it feels like I'm definitely not in the loop with a lot of this stuff. But it's also, it feels like the kind of show where it will explain all this stuff eventually. But it's also, they need to tell an entertaining story. It needs to be funny. It needs to be heartwarming. And it needs to be all this stuff rather than just a dry explanation of, oh, the Reapers touched a person. And the reason why they're doing that is because their souls are whatever, and that was, well, that would be a very interesting lore video for YouTube, but not an interesting TV show to watch for 13 weeks.
This is a really good show in terms of ADHD. I was thinking about it as you were talking, because it's a slow release. It's a slow release of endorphins, so you get the funny, you get the serious, and then you also get all the character interaction, and you slowly learn things as they happen to different characters.
Yes.
Like the one with Rube and him meeting the person above him kind of thing.
Which I think
is like the next episode even or something like that.
And I was thinking that, like, we talk so much about that, too much exposition, it's too much tell, not show. This is very much a show, not tell. Like, so they've got Betty saying, don't hold on to personal items, it won't help you. And then it shows her breaking into her own coffin and stealing a ring. Rube's like, don't go back, you can't go back home.
Yeah.
And then he opens his wallet and there's a picture of a person in there and it's like, who's that?
Yeah.
You know?
There's a lot
that's not said.
Yeah, but it's also, it wasn't necessarily too much, but I feel like they could have cut out half of the narration just because it felt constant. And it didn't necessarily feel like it was superfluous, but it definitely felt like you could have cut out half of it and I wouldn't have missed much. Because it felt constant. It felt like George needed to explain everything and it didn't.
She's kind of explaining why she's doing things. This is the thing, right?
Yeah.
If you consider someone that is at George's age, right, an 18-year-old, and you turn around to the 18-year-old and say, don't put that in your resume. You will not get hired if you put, I like petting camels with my toes in your resume, right? Bad example, okay, but it's just sense that I have. You say don't do this, they're going to do it because they need to create their own boundaries. But then you've got people that have gone through all of this, so they already know what George is thinking, and you're kind of siding with the adults going, yeah, okay, that's not a great idea. You're supposed to move on, but you're looking at this from an 18-year-old point of view. So it definitely helps with an older generation of people going, yeah, for me, I feel like I'd be able to move on quite easily. And I feel like I can show that in my personal life that I am able to move on easily with things. Whereas, like, some people struggle. And I think that that's a great way to ground the show a little bit in Georgia going, I want to be a part of this niche of people at work because I'm feeling alienated. Yeah, they could definitely just go remove the audio and stuff, but I think it takes away from the charm of the show as well.
And
it takes away too much from the charm because Georgia explaining things as she goes about it is kind of something that you don't realise you like overall. I don't think they do it in the movie as much.
And I think as well, her outer monologue doesn't always match her inner monologue. She doesn't talk a lot, she shrugs a lot, and she'll kind of, can you mind the phones? And she's like, you can see she's bored, but you don't realise, unless you have the monologue, that, she's actually quite hurt and upset that she's been excluded from something that she didn't want to be part of.
Yeah.
And that can only be explained if she explains it with her words in an actual sense,
she'd be an extrovert, not an introvert.
And it takes it away. It's the whole point that there's this whole thing going on inside her head that doesn't match what's going on the outside. So, yeah. And a lot of the times I go, oh, yeah, how are you feeling? And then she does this big monologue of what she's really feeling on the inside.
And so, yeah, you could definitely take it away, but you would lose way too much of the show, I think. Like, even if you think you wouldn't, I definitely think you would.
It's just also part of the style of the show.
That's a big thing.
It's got a certain
noir feeling, a little bit of a noir.
Yes,
it does.
Even her voicing and accent is a bit noir.
And
she doesn't sound like an 18-year-old girl, does she?
No.
And it's a bit omniscient at times as well, so it's a good way to not just introduce a random narrator partway through. It's not jarring when it's like, Roxy does this because she had her own personal issues. It's not like a random voice comes in and says it. It's just Georgia monologuing and kind of explaining the world to the way that they understand it. It's like the angels in the phone box. It's the best Doctor Who episode, right? Because you explore Doctor Who in New Who with Tennant Blink. You explore that from the world's perspective, not from the Doctor's perspective. Yes. It's why it's the perfect introduction to New Who, and that's why this show works so well, is because you are constantly exploring the world with them. You're not watching and going, oh, Superman's doing Superman stuff. You're actually experiencing with Georgia.
And without realizing it throughout the series of the show, you watch her family that she's left behind slowly break down and self-destruct. You watch her forge these bonds with these people that she reaps with. You show her looking for meaning in the work that she does, a job that she didn't even want to do in the first place, but she had to earn money.
Because in the pilot episode, she was forced to apply for this job by her mother, and I think she...
The very first episode, her mum makes her go for a job with a temp agency. She torpedoes it, so she ends up getting a really crap filing job, and then when she's at that filing job on her lunch break, she dies. And so then, because she has to go back and get a job, she applies as Millie and then gets this job, and she ends up being an absolute go-getter. And, you know, Dolores hated George but loves Millie, which is her alter ego. She finds this meaning in work that she never had before, and it's like she all of these progressions kind of happen, but they happen really slowly. And, yeah.
If given a second chance, would you do it differently? Definitely what it is. Like, with the knowledge that you have now of just one day out in the world, would you redo that day differently? And it's very much that in the workplace.
It is a light comedy, isn't it? I mean,
it's very macabre. It's very macabre.
It's got a bit of awkwardness to it as well. You know, this deliberate awkwardness between all the... in all the conversations, and a touch of cringe, maybe.
Yeah, not so much that I can't deal with it, because don't like that. But
it's not enough to hurt.
Yes. But one of my favourite scenes in the series is the conversation about the parrot, because it's just two people having a conversation about a parrot, and it's just, it doesn't mean anything. It's just like, I just want a friend. I don't want to eat my friend, you know. And it's just, it could have been cut. Like you said, it could have been cut and added with something more important, but it's just brilliant, you know?
That was one of the best things. I like that.
And then when she's sitting in the car doing a personality test while, you know, meanwhile they're trying to steal the money from the guy that's about to be murdered, and it didn't need to be there, but it just adds to it, I think. But
I can't remember his name, the British guy's name. Mason. It goes through... Mason has got such a life and such a presence in this show.
Yes.
And I think that that really goes into depth of the different ways that Reapers can live. There's definitely a lot of moments with Mason where you're like, we didn't need that, but I'm glad to it.
Yeah.
Like, he tries drug smuggling at one point.
I have illegals in my bottle.
But as a Reaper, you can move more drugs because you, if they break... you're not going to die. still live. He's just going to have a real big full-on high for a bit.
But then Mason died in the 60s because he got told that you can get the ultimate high by drilling a hole in your head.
Yeah.
So that's him all over, I think.
Yes. It really is. And it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So it's been... You've watched it recently. How recently did you last watch it?
We
started this year.
Yeah.
This year?
It's just become available on Prime. It's been on MGM for a while, so and then now it's... It. Yeah, mm-hmm. I watched it.
Yeah, I mean, because Amazon bought MGM, so that's how it works.
But yeah, there's some that you still can't get, but that one you can get. So we've been waiting for a while. We used to have it, and then we lost it. So as soon as it came out, I was like, right, that's it. And... We were watching other stuff, and then she quickly pivoted because she's like, no, this is awesome. I need to watch more of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you loved it, didn't you?
Yeah, so Jeanette, what do you think of it? You've watched it for the first time?
It was good, but I wouldn't watch anymore.
Oh, okay.
It's not your bag.
It's not America.
But I did love the three-wheel car.
Yeah,
loved that. That was amazing.
I liked the mother's makeup is very much represented by that scene where she's smiling for the photograph while digging her claws into the door to go.
That is very indicative.
We're happy. And then the ultimate fucked up thing where she's going, oh, it's like Stray Cats. If you just stop thinking about being sad about your sister, you'll stop being sad about her. And I'm just that's horrific.
The worst mother.
Yeah.
She's
not great. Yeah.
No. But I think the makeup is definitely indicative of all the characters because Betty is very much like a go-getter. You don't know who she is underneath everything. Yeah. Even though it goes into trying...
Who's Betty again?
The one with the curly hair.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I think, probably just judging from one episode isn't fair. But as you say, you don't know who she is because even her face looks like a mask.
That's the point.
It's very characterised.
Everything is intentional.
Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting comedy. It was, quite macabre. Mm. It felt a bit disjointed, but probably because I hadn't seen previous episodes. Yeah. And so you're just beginning to understand something and then... Shifts immediately away from that to something.
Those transitions a bit too fast,
a bit too jarring.
I didn't have long enough to get, and I think again that's probably more aimed at quick attention span. And I'm not quick attention span viewing.
As a younger audience.
I'm enjoying this scene. I don't want to. I'm not ready to move on. It's sort of my problem. I had Sesame Street. I didn't like Sesame Street. I'd be enjoying that, little skit, and then suddenly I'm jolted to something else. It's like, no, I wasn't ready.
I want to know more about the number five. I don't want to learn about the sea.
And I felt this a little bit too jumpy.
Jumped away from the count. Counting.
I love the count.
What draws you to, I want to say Stranger Things, Dead Like Me? What do you like about it?
I don't know. It's just different from other shows.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it seemed edgy and then when you started watching it, you're like, no, this is quite charming. It's got like a bit of a modern day Addams Family maybe? Like touches on that bit of kookiness or...
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't know? You have no opinions.
Why did you bring it?
I have no opinions about Adam's Family. Yeah. It's probably more accurate.
I haven't watched Adam's Family in a long time.
Okay, no.
So, I don't relate to that.
Okay.
But what is it that you like about the show?
When do you watch it? Like, do you come home from school and sit down and watch it?
Eating dinner.
Okay.
As a family, we sit down and watch a show together.
Yep.
I don't know, it's just... The character's flaws and everything.
Okay, for sure.
Like a good flawed character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. So when your mum initially brought this to the table for you to watch, you weren't interested in watching it?
I was a little bit like, I'll try it.
I mean, you're always got to be skeptic when your parents try and introduce you.
Do you feel like that's because your mum constantly brings terrible TV shows to the table?
But that's okay, because you love her because of her flaws.
Yeah. I don't trust her sometimes.
Yeah.
TV viewing.
What about you, Justin? What about you?
Yeah. This was your first time watching this too.
True.
Would you sit down and watch this again?
Probably not. Not enough giant fighting robots for me.
Now we know what Justin's afterlife looks like.
The premise doesn't quite grab me. And so I largely watch things for ideas rather than the actual what's going on the screen quite often.
Okay, sure. So as a dungeon master in D&D,
I hate it.
Gaining... No, I'm asking this from a different direction. So as a dungeon master for D&D, you do a lot of world creation.
Yes.
How do you feel about the slices of world creation and the way it was released in this episode? Like, what were your takeaways from that?
The drip feeding is quite good because that a game, you're of course trying to create motivation in the characters to do things and things, and I wasn't seeing anything like that here, but it's not important for a TV program.
No, but did you feel like it was railroady for Georgia? Like they were trying to constantly push her forward as opposed to guide her forward in the episode?
Yeah, she's being railroaded.
Yeah, okay. Angus, as a DM, same question.
I don't know. I don't see how it could be either, admittedly. Yeah. It's a TV show. These things just happen.
Yeah, I mean, quite often you do draw inspiration from plots and things like that, but there's not much I could draw from here.
No, admittedly neither.
Yeah.
I did like the world building.
I didn't mind it. And that idea of drip feeding and introducing things slowly is a good idea.
Yeah.
And even the fact that they would do things like the parrot scene or the scene you described earlier where they're knocking some guy out of a tree or doing a puzzle while people are shooting each other and things like that sort of sets the tone for they've been doing this for a long time and they don't care about it. And, you know, it just creates the personalities.
Yes.
When I say that it feels like it's railroady, I mean in the sense that Georgia wants to go back to her family. She really wants to pursue that storyline. In a way, it feels like Rube, I would say, as like the dungeon master in this sense, is constantly saying, no, don't do that. No, you have to go this way. Would you say that in that sense?
I would say it's not railroady because in a railroad scenario, the family would move away. The family would be, you know, too scarred by what happened with their daughter in this township. They'd move away and they'd be out of reach. The fact that they're still in the show and that relationship is being explored and the daughter's, George is trying to figure things out with the family and learning from their failings, and they are mostly all failings, still is content and story. So I don't think it's...
Okay,
yeah.
It's giving background to the character too. Yes. It's making you feel for her.
Yes.
And sense her dislocation. She's dislocated. She doesn't quite belong in either world yet.
Yes.
She doesn't, like the other characters are very used to being dead.
Yes.
They're very integrated and also into that. Where she isn't, she's still...
Yeah, it's also feels
three
like,
different worlds and she doesn't fit in any of them.
Yes.
Yeah. And it also felt like, definitely, not just in terms of, oh, they've been there for a while, but like there's the flashback with Betty being 1920s, like, obviously she also died decades earlier, and so it's used to this setup. Like, I don't know how old, in quotes, everybody else is, but, like, she's been dead for, like, what, a month?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're all so jaded, and they're just, like, get with the program, but they would have been exactly how she was, but they just don't
have and also, like, they're adults, she's not. They've been dead for decades, she just hasn't been...
Yeah.
When I started CFS, it was very much like that because a lot of the adults around me had, say, been to, like, car accidents, bushfires, things like that. They were old hands at the whole thing. And I was kind of experiencing everything for the first time. And a lot of people were very much like, just get with the program. You're going to see car accidents. And, like, that's just what they experience. It's like they've seen, you know, car accidents. They've numbed themselves to it, and so it's very much, you know...
Yeah, but it's also a way you can do that while still being empathetic and knowing this is what it's like for the first time.
That's the interesting thing, is a couple of people were very much like, okay, this person's struggling. And, like, at the same time, they still look out for you, right? They still go... Like, even the jaded people are like, it's going to be okay, but they definitely don't have someone holding her hand, George's hand, in this... case going, hey, it's going to be okay. Like, I've had
that's in part due to people going, this experience is awful the first time. And if the more I think about and sympathize with this person experiencing this for the first time, the more I myself am remembering myself experiencing it, and all those emotions bring back up. So, I feel like people would be jaded because they're cutting themselves off. Not from just what's happening now, but from what's happening in the past, their history with these events. And so,
that is a classic coping mechanism for dealing with trauma. People just kind of
Shut off.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that includes shutting off their perception mm-hmm. of people who are suffering around the environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so who's the audience for this in general?
Mackenzie
is the audience. Yeah. Right. And obviously that still stands up. You're enjoying it.
I'd say
it's from 2001, did you say?
2003.
Yeah. So, so obviously still standing up.
Yeah, it was really great rewatching it and actually falling back in love with it again and watching it with her and watching her fall in love with it. It was beautiful. Yeah. Especially because I did say last year there was a lot of shows that I did love back in the day and I went back and watched them and went,
Is it because they've aged or is it because you've aged?
I've aged. Mm. And I think as shows of, you know, look, I loved X-Files for its time, but it was very much of its time and things of... We're going back and watching Fringe now. I'm watching Fringe before I go to bed. I'm going, this is a lot more sophisticated than the X-Files was. Yeah. Because it's the next generation, you know?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And that's the difference.
But it's evolved since, so don't worry about that.
What shows have or Fringe has?
They've attempted to recreate... NBC have attempted to recreate Fringe multiple times since and failed miserably every
that's
time.
That's it.
Miserable.
Talking of recreating, there's potential that Blake 7 is going to be.
I heard that, yes.
So that's caused a lot of excitement on the Doctor Who forum.
Blake 7. Hard doing the characters for that. But yes.
For some reason, I'm not sure why I remember this show, but it ran for like one season in 2000. And.
She's got a lot of thoughts on the...
So how would you rate this show, Charlotte? we got a rating there. Quite positive.
It's this obscure show from... Actually, no, I think it's from 1999. It just aired in Australia in the year 2000. It's called Now and Again.
Now and Again. I reckon I watched a couple of episodes of that. And that was a guy he died and then came back or something?
No, what happened was a guy had died and they transplanted his brain into a working machine. They basically wanted to create an artificial human, but they can't create a brain yet. So they just used the dead, took his brain and put it into its body. And one of the plot points is he can't see his old family, he can't see his old life. The style of the show is completely opposite to this. It's very... So now and again, it's very much cool, almost upon a cold, and very chill. I think it's barely so. It's...
I watched a couple of episodes of it, and I was like, why am I watching?
Yeah.
But it was on at like midnight or something came out.
It was on Prime Time in Channel 10.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I missed it at that stage, yeah. Maybe I caught the repeats or something.
Yeah, and it definitely... I'm not sure why it reminded me, just because the mood's completely different. Yeah, and it's actually because like, most of the plot lines have got nothing to do with that, but it's... Some episodes will be like half with the family trying to resolve their grief, and the other being this guy who's now got super abilities and can do superhero things.
So $6 million man, but
but definitely
RoboCop.
There
are things that we need to bring to the table. $6 million man and RoboCop.
Yeah.
I've never seen RoboCop
because I also found it on YouTube for some reason. And I uploaded all the episodes, and it's apart from this vendor plot, it's got nothing to do with this show, so I'm not sure why it reminded me so much. But it did also remind me of Ghosts, especially how a lot of the deaths in this and a lot of deaths in Ghosts are basically played for laughs.
Yeah.
In the sense of, say, one of the characters in Ghosts was a scoutmaster who got an arrow through his neck.
You mentioned that today as well.
Oh,
we were watching it today. She's going, so that guy from Ghost that's got the arrow through his head, he wasn't reaped before he killed. His soul was reaped.
Because he still had a thingy.
And it's reminding me of that as well. I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe mine is not particularly original. It just merges other shows. Reminds me I need to actually watch some of these shows again. But yeah.
Okay, so what kind of food is the show? Is the question.
I don't know. I've been trying to think of something relatively, you know, macabre and...
Shara says popcorn.
Popcorn?
Waffles?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely be waffles.
A Waffle House. Mm-hmm.
What do they eat in that restaurant?
It is. Breakfast.
Yeah. I'm having a line from Parks and Recreation. It's a conversation between Leslie and Ron about why don't... It wasn't everybody eat breakfast foods. Yeah, some people are idiots. Yeah.
There used to be a Waffle House in Adelaide as well as the Pancake House, and the Waffle House was just down under
in a basement-y sort of area with, the little seats and stuff. Oh, we used to go there, my best mate and I, before school and stuff, and then even during school and after school.
Was that where Southern Cross is, on the near the corner of Rundle Mall and
Yeah, that was it.
There was
a
30s
or something?
Yeah.
Oh, is that the one where they torn it down and it's now a bougie place of,
It's a big corporate building or something. Yeah. Some bougie buildings in there,
That, and this show inspired that love of that specific kitchen, admittedly.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's gone.
So anyway. I definitely think some blackberries with the waffles, though, because they just mark everything black.
Makes it look like blood.
Waffles and blackberries.
Waffles.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got plenty of shows coming up. Some will be not hold up, and others will hold up really well. I guess we'll find out which is which.
Yeah. We're off the hook now for a while, so...
Coming out soon.
Yeah. Oh, now I need to work out what I'm going to bring to the table this year. I'm not sure.
We're racing through them.
I know I had Battlestar Galactica on the film, so that...
You're going to do both,
I was
going to
do both.
We'll finish it up with a board game. Where half the players are secretly Cylons and sabotaging the ship.
That game is unwinnable. It really is.
This was such a wonderful recording. Thank you. Goodbye. Let's leave Battlestar Galactica alone now. Bye.